But most importantly, some random players had massive weeks. Some studs left duds in your lineup. So today, as you all know, we go game by game. Look at the matchups, look at the details, look at the stars, and look at why maybe the players you were most focused on did not have a good weekend. Hayden Winks always joins me, and John Daigle of BetSperts and 4for4 also joins me. Guys, it's the Instant Reaction Show. We are not responsible for anything we say here for the next hour and a half. How are you feeling, Hayden?
I don't think that's how this works at all.
Okay, let's do it. And we'll start with one of your first games, John Daigle. Mm-hmm. It is the Seahawks at the Lions. Hayden, we pointed this one out in the Friday matchup show. A 48-45 barn burner that the 2-2 now Seattle Seahawks came on top. Daigle, Geno Smith, 320, two touchdowns. Rashad Penny, back last year in the same game he rushed for 170 yards, goes back 151 and two tutties on the ground.
Over 1,000 yards of combined offense, 93 total points in this game, 12 combined touchdowns, and zero defense to speak of on either side of the ball for both these teams. Let's go ahead and start with the Seahawks, because Geno Smith now back-to-back games has been the QB7, and with primetime pending in week 4, QB2 right now, because Seattle is giving themselves more chances with this increased no-huddle rate and pace for 69 and 63 plays in this stint. And you could argue, when you go back and watch, there's meat on the bone here. Even looking as early as the first quarter, Tyler Lockett, a little double move on third down, and Geno Smith overthrows him for what would have been a 50-plus yard touchdown. Also, when you watch the film here, Geno Smith certainly does have command of this offense. It is a two-man show, well, a three-man show. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and a committee of three tight ends they use every single week, both in the red zone and between the 20s. They are a pivotal part of this passing game. But the way Geno Smith handles himself, honestly, and it was the Lions defense, of course, but backpedaling, understanding where players are, he really does have a good feel for what he's doing in this system, for better or worse. So at least we know in good matchups, we can stream him if necessary.
Wow. Geno Smith, his last few games, Hayden, 320 yards, 325 yards. Like, everyone, so many people had been waiting for like an opportunity for him here. And it really is, despite the same exact play callers last season with Russell Wilson, a very different offense and different results that we're getting this year.
Yeah, going into this game, he was leading the NFL in completion percentage over expected. And then today, it's plus 13% again. So, I mean, Geno Smith, like Daigle said, has command of the offense. And if the offense is going to be able to pass more just because they're building some more confidence with this, I think that DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are going to be great picks from where they were going in drafts. We know they're never going to use that third wide receiver. These tight ends are catching some passes here and there, but if this offense was projected for 25 pass attempts a game, and now it's going to be closer to like 32 or something like that, all of a sudden we're cooking with DK Metcalf as like an upside wide receiver three, and Tyler Lockett slowly becoming an every week starter too.
Okay, I have to ask you, Eagle, because Rashad Penny was a mid-round pick for a lot of people, opened the season with 60, 15, and 66 rushing yards. Now gets 151. Was this matchup based, opponent based, or has something changed a little bit with the Travis Homer injury that we can expect maybe Rashad Penny to get more work moving forward and like be in flex conversation each week?
The Travis Homer injury has allowed Penny to run a route on over half of Geno Smith's dropbacks now in back-to-back games, but still handling over 60% of the team's running back carries, Penny is. And you're seeing even in the box score what he does when he gets those carries. He only had 8 yards at the half, and his two explosive touchdown runs, a 36-yard run on third down in the third quarter, zero blitz call. Lions sent the house. Penny breaks the line of scrimmage, and of course, there's no one left in the secondary to catch him. That's his first touchdown, and then also put the game away in the final quarter with a 41-yard dash here. But he is very clearly the back to have in this backfield, and there are not enough touches to go around to consider Ken Walker anything more than just a contingency option right now. So rank him among Rashad White's, Alexander Madison's, the rest of the backups that you can't possibly do anything with unless the starter ahead of them gets injured.
8 carries for 29 yards for him. Okay, the other story this week, Daigle, was Jamal Williams getting the full workload, the running back 7 or 8 in points per game, and he doesn't disappoint. 19 carries, 108 yards, and 2 scores here to go along with just 1 reception. He must have looked good here despite 93 total points being scored by both sides. Maybe even a different way than DeAndre Swift has done it in the past, but I got to say, even that 51-yard long run that he had is very un-Jamal Williams-like. Let's put it that way.
And he was sitting roughly around 4.5 yards per carry, just chipping away, just gaining the tough yards the entire time. So if he was going to reach 20 carries in this game, there was a chance he was going to get over 100 eventually anyhow. But yes, the big 51-yard touchdown that involved at least two broken tackles certainly helped here. And he only out-snapped Craig Reynolds 36-25, but it doesn't matter when he's on the field, and he's on the field for a reason. That's why you see that he handled 20 of 27 backfield touches. And Reynolds, even though he ran more routes than Jamal Williams this game, it was actually a timeshare for his touches with Justin Jackson, which we did not expect the 1B running back essentially for the Lions to be a timeshare. So yes, Jamal Williams got there for you today. He will continue getting there for you through week 7, since we assume DeAndre Swift will be out through the Lions week 6 bye.
I mean, yeah, big story of the year right now is the Lions. They've put up 35 points, 36, 24, and then 45 points offense with Jared Goff, who's not going to be an above average quarterback, but this is a functional scheme that can run the ball. They can use play action when they're actually fully healthy. They've got some dudes, especially if TJ Hawkinson's going to keep this up. Obviously, he was a huge benefit because of game script, the defense, Amon-Ra, the whole thing. But he looked good, made some big plays downfield.
Last question, Daigle. Because this passing offense was missing a ton of pieces too, right? Amon-Ra, DJ Chark. Mm-hmm. Two questions. And we'll review the game as we go along this week, especially in stats versus film. But from your seat, how was the utilization different for so many of these pieces? Did someone take the quote-unquote Amon-Ra St. Brown role? And maybe most importantly, are we seeing TJ Hawkinson turn the corner? Solid last week, and then today, 12 targets, 8 receptions, 179 yards, and 2 scores.
Again, I'm the one who usually comes on this show and pours cold water on everything as right. A reasonable person. I don't think we're seeing TJ Hawkinson turn the corner. This came... Remember, 1 week in week 3 after he hit a season low in target share and routes run, only a route on 68% of dropbacks in week 3. With no bodies, with no one else to get out there and catch the ball, of course he showed up for a route on 84% of dropbacks and recorded a team-high 30% target share. Some big plays here, and it took a little luck to put him in position. Tyler Lockett fumbled the first and only punt of the game, which then put the Lions just outside the red zone, which then allowed Hawkinson to score a touchdown on the very next play. Also had a nifty move against a defense that, again, does not know how to wrap up whatsoever. So as he's going towards the sideline, he breaks it upfield to gain essentially another 40 extra yards here. Amon-Ra St. Brown, this is my read on the situation, cannibalizes the targets since he has the same ADOT as Hawkinson. And I will continue to think that, even though Hawkinson, it was a impressive performance. When you go back and watch this game, you'll see some extended arm catches, right? Actually showing his athleticism, which we see so rarely. But if you tell me long term, like, is he still a top 5 tight end? Absolutely not.
Yeah. Even at a position we're really searching for. Yeah. Just less than like 30 yards in each of the contests combined. Thus, yeah. The Lions have the New England Patriots defense up next after this. Okay. Hayden, over to you. Maybe better teams on display. Maybe not better offenses, though. Bills at the Ravens. I'm just kidding about that note. 23-20. The Buffalo Bills come out on top. But Hayden, I checked at halftime. 20-10, the Ravens were leading. Some big plays made defensively at the end of this contest. Some decisions to not kick field goals and instead go for 7 points. But the Bills claw their way back and win here to go 3-1.
So let's just get the fourth down decision out of the way early. It was a tie game. The Ravens are on their 3-yard line with 4 minutes left, 20-20, and they decide to go for it. Lamar ends up throwing an interception there in shotgun. I believe it was empty, kind of rolls out and throws an interception. It wasn't really his fault. There was nothing available. Obviously, the play there was the Bills. We think that we can either stop them on the 2-yard line if we don't get this, or even if we kick a field goal, we're going up against the Bills, and the Bills are probably just going to score a touchdown on us and win this game anyway. So I don't really mind the call either way. If you look at any of the models, it's basically a toss-up. It doesn't really matter either way. The Ravens couldn't move the ball in the second half, and they've made an announcement that they're going to have a press conference next week. I wonder if that could possibly be Greg Roman. The reason why I say that today, Lamar Jackson, his ADOT was 4.5 yards. They could not throw anything downfield, couldn't move the ball. Their running game still isn't that great. J.K. Dobbins had a couple of explosive runs, but their pass game just didn't have enough consistency overall. Ended up having a negative EPA per play against the Bills, who are clearly still very good at defense, missing some key players, but still very good in general.
From what I saw, the weather was a factor too for the receivers in particular. Like lots of slip balls through, like even hands together.
Yeah. Gabe Davis had a couple on the other side. Yeah, there was some. I would say it impacted it a little bit, but this kind of goes back to some of like the Greg Roman passing stuff that we've been talking about for multiple years now. So we'll see.
The press conference thing, I'm trying to search it right now on Twitter, and it kind of seems like this is a normal thing that happens on Mondays, but they might also have two, like one at 2:30 and one at 3:30. So I don't want to speculate like too much of what that could be, especially because like it feels like this offense has been really good this season. And as Lamar through the first 3 weeks has been one of like the true vertical passers in the NFL, attempting in 20 plus yard passes at like a top five, top six rate. As you said, nothing could get going here. But isn't that on some level that plus weather where you have this Bills defense, who got a couple pieces back and Jordan Poyer made some big plays in this contest, like when they're going to play two high shells and play the same defense over and over and over again, where Lamar has, you know, eviscerated blitzes all season long. I know that Tremaine Edmonds sent one in this game and he had another great play from it. But on some of this is not an expectation, but a reality that could happen to this Ravens offense.
Yeah, no, this was like as expected. The Bills didn't do anything that we weren't expecting matchup wise. So it was kind of disappointing to see Rashad Bateman, 3 catches, 17 yards on 6 targets. We talked about in the show before that he was used as more of a deep threat, and we didn't really see anything happening underneath except for those like quick slants against one-on-one coverage. Nothing really schemed up for somebody that we thought that could have maybe a little bit better of a game here. So I think it was a very disappointing loss for the Ravens. I think Lamar Jackson still looks good overall, but this was weather, good defense, maybe it's some bad schematic things. I can't wait to watch this on tape.
And even the fourth down call, Devin Duvernay was open for multiple seconds in the back right corner of the end zone, and Lamar just couldn't get it there. Like either his vision was covered or it wasn't the first route on the play, so on and so forth. So that's something that I'm sure they'll go back on. Something that stood out to me, J.K. Dobbins, 13 carries, 41 yards, a touchdown on the ground. J.K. Dobbins, 4 catches, 22 yards, a touchdown in the air. I know those both were very close to the goal line, and so it's kind of whatever play is called, we can hope they go to J.K. Dobbins if we start him in their lineup, but it's still nothing like chunk gains, huge plays, like, hey, this is a focal point of their offense.
Yeah, so there's a couple, like, maybe 10, 15 yard plays mixed in there, but his touchdowns, there was one, it was a goal line flip, like classic Andy Reid stuff, and then there was a goal line zone read touchdown. He was left open for a big catch in the middle of the game as well. I thought that he looked totally fine. Justice Hill at the end of the game, left with some type of injury, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. Kenyon Drake with a healthy scratch behind him. So I think that this was probably a statement game for J.K. Dobbins just to get some confidence going, and his role is probably going to be fine. Just as a reminder, in general, the Ravens don't use their running backs all too often compared to the rest of the league. They don't throw to them. They don't use them at the goal line compared to most offenses. But if he can at least be like CEH, you know, where it's just like a good offense. Maybe not the greatest player ever when he's coming back from his knee injury, but you're at least attached to one of the best offenses in the league.
The Justice Hill injury as well is why I will be higher on Dobbins moving forward. We'll see if it's a long-term thing, but that opens the door since they would then activate Kenyon Drake, who, as you mentioned, Hayden, they've healthy scratched 2 weeks in a row now. That tells us how they view him. So it's all Dobbins from here if Hill's out.
And at some point, Mark Andrews had to crash back down to earth. 2 catches, 15 yards. I mean, this is like really crashing, but I think it goes back to the defense that the Bills played, how you can't pass vertically because we know Andrews has been living in that intermediate to deep territory too, and then the weather on top of it.
Yeah, and he also had an end zone target that he was open that Lamar just missed him, and then there was an offensive pass interference called on him in the red zone that he was tackled at the 1-yard line. So if either one of those things flip, he would have saved himself.
There was also a play that like they threw it up to him and he knocked it down into Devin Duvernay's hands. That was a catch for Devin Duvernay. Yep. Devin Duvernay makes one ridiculous play every single week that is not repeatable, yet we've had 4 straight weeks of irrepeatable performances from him. It's
what happens when you're a 4-3 athlete, you know?
Okay, Bills in, because there's a lot to talk about here. Mm-hmm. What we saw from Devin Singletary last week carried over a little bit here to 5 targets, 4 receptions, 47 yards. However, Josh Allen was the team's leading rusher with 11 carries for 70 yards and a score. Obviously, the leading passer at 213 yards and a score. Yet, the two top targets Stephon Diggs, 4 for 62. And then after that, it's a bunch of question marks.
Yeah, the Ravens secondary played really well. Marcus Peters was mad at the end of the game, but before that was absolutely dominating in general. Gabe Davis doesn't look fully healthy to me. He also had a really bad drop. Big injury news, we had Jameson Crowder has an ankle injury. It seems like it could be a very serious injury. Then Isaiah McKenzie has or was in the concussion protocol after that. So Khalil Shakir got a couple more reps than normal. The big thing at the running back position was there was a sequence where Devin Singletary drops a pass and then has a fumble shortly after it. And I thought that they're going to go to Zach Moss, maybe James Cook. They give Zach Moss like the next drive. He has 3 carries, 6 yards on the day, does nothing with them. And then it just goes immediately back to Devin Singletary when the game was closed. So there was every opportunity for somebody else in this backfield to take advantage of some costly mistakes, but they still don't trust those other backs. So Devin Singletary was out there.
Devin Singletary, the numbers behind the scenes show 55 snaps to Zach Moss's 6. Yikes. That is ludicrous.
And Isaiah McKenzie head injury. Is that what forced him out of this contest? And then we saw more Khalil Shakir coming in as the slot wide receiver because Jake Kumerow was inactive for this contest.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that Isaiah McKenzie probably is going to, he's like a winner just because Jameson Crowder is going to be out. I don't think they really trust Khalil Shakir. He's had a kind of a brutal start to his career and day 3 pick. So once Isaiah McKenzie gets out of the concussion protocol, all of a sudden now we have potentially somebody that's going to be running like 70% of the routes in this offense. I think that he could be a pretty big win for those in PPR leagues.
Yeah. Dawson Knox, 3 for 40. And I think he started making even more plays once Isaiah McKenzie left this game as well. Okay. I'll go next. Let's talk about two new quarterbacks. Jets at Steelers. That means it's 24-20 victory for the New York Jets over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's get this out of the way. The first halves were awful on both sides. Zach Wilson opened this contest 6 of 16 at halftime, including an interception near the end of the first half, which took away a field goal try for their own team to bring it to 13-3, and instead the interception they threw to the Steelers allowed them to narrow a deficit after a stupid Carl Lawson roughing the passer penalty to 10-6. And as for Mitch Trubisky, he was awful. I mean, it's exactly what we can expect from him. 7 of 13 for 84 yards and an interception against an 8-man rush. There was one occasion where he turned his back to the defense against a 3-man pass rush, 8 men dropping, and tried to run out of the back of the pocket and got sacked, ran right into a defensive lineman. Awful. So what we get, nice surprise, halftime, Kenny Pickett comes in. Lovely. We've been hoping for this, even though Mike Tomlin said that this team just needed a spark in this contest. We'll get to that in a moment. But Kenny Pickett's first throw was interception. It was a deep shot to Chase Claypool, which bounced off his hands and into a Jets defensive back. Just overall, Kenny Pickett moved the offense much better. 10 of 13, 120, and 3 interceptions. I would say 2 of the interceptions were a bit of an outlier and can't really read into them. One, I just mentioned Chase Claypool. The other one was the Hail Mary at the end of the contest. But there was nothing that was outstanding, hang your hat on, of, oh, this guy's going to transcend the position like we have seen with other rookies once they enter contests. But the offense certainly did move incrementally better. Like you saw George Pickens have opportunities on the left side of the field, not just the left sideline, to win and go up and get it in single coverage. You saw a 3rd and 6 or a 3rd and 8 where a pass rusher was bearing down him, a free rusher down the middle, and he hits Pat Freiermuth, which then the Steelers later put points on that drive. So that was a real positive. But maybe the most important thing was after that rough start for Zach Wilson in the first half, he finishes this game like 11 of 15, and the Jets look very consistent over and over again, finish with an 11-play drive, back-to-back touchdown drives to, again, come back and win this game, something that was very un-Jets-like, and I think a real nice building block for Zach Wilson to have for the rest of the season, because again, I think it was a kind of a crossroads moment for him in this game, especially against Minkah Fitzpatrick and some other defensive pieces. And he stepped up to the occasion in the final 2 quarters.
I'm looking at the box scores. It looks like the Jets started with a run on 17 of their 27 drives. I'm assuming that's exactly kind of what we should be expecting from this offense, to try to hide Zach Wilson so you don't have to win games late. Is it like a pro Breece Hall thing?
Yeah. I was noticing this too. Michael Carter still got the start. Then right. There's even plenty of instances where it was both Michael Carter and Breece Hall in the backfield. And then Michael Carter kind of became the lead back for Breece Hall on these outside runs. And so he was the lead blocker in those situations. So both are playing still quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, this team even lost their right tackle. And then Connor McDermott had to shift over to right tackle. Elijah Vera Tucker played left tackle. So they're still down all of these offensive linemen. But yes, I think that they were hoping to get in positive situations on first down. But then Hayden, what that turned into was either a first and 20 because of a holding penalty, a second and 12, sometimes a second and 7, a third and 6. So there's still some instances where they had to, you know, climb out of it. And again, in a second half, there was a lot of positives to Zach Wilson's game, especially some throws to Corey Davis on a second and 9. Early throws to Elijah Moore. That's where all of Elijah Moore's targets went to. But in order for me to like get fully on board for Zach Wilson, I think we need four quarters of this for sure.
Was there a favorite for him? Did it seem like he was actually leaning in one receiver's direction?
I mean, early
outside
on,
of the box score?
Yeah, no. Early on, it was definitely Elijah Moore. Like there was this really nice comeback route along the right sideline. He hit on two chunk gains, another one over the middle of the field. And then after that first, again, that first half, he never had another completion for substantial yardage to Elijah Moore. Corey Davis made two pivotal plays towards the end of the game, like overcross right next to Devin Bush, a linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, look, it's not perfect, you know? Like there were still some really, really awful passes, like just slightly off target in terms of there was a third and 6, and he tried to sidearm it to Tyler Conklin, who completely jumped off the ground, extended, tipped it up in the air. Minkah Fitzpatrick returned it for a touchdown. But arguably, from what we've already seen in what the 15th start, the 14th start of his career, maybe the second best start, the second best game from start to finish we've seen from Zach Wilson. And what I was most intrigued by was him just sticking to the pocket in the second half instead of trying to completely evade. There are a couple of those. And when you go back and watch this Daigle this week, you'll notice some of them. But most of all, he was sticking to the structure of the offense. And Mike LaFleur still wanted to create some really fun plays because, as you all saw, I'm sure Zach Wilson needed a touchdown catch in this contest.
I'm looking, I think, one of the big positives for these young quarterbacks. Zach Wilson only sacked one time on 37 dropbacks, and then Kenny Pickett wasn't sacked at all. So I think that that's optimistic that at least they're staying within the structure of their offense and they're not having too many negative plays aside from those interceptions. Just curious about the Kenny Pickett stuff. Do you think that Trubisky either played so bad they can never go back to him, or that Kenny Pickett looked good enough that we should feel confident that he's going to at least have another chance soon or possibly for the rest of the season? And then was there any reason why George Pickens got going here versus other games?
Yeah, the easy answer for George Pickens is that Kenny Pickett just gave him a chance, like legit just gave him a chance. It wasn't pinned along the left sideline. A lot of it still was to the left side of the field, but in one-on-one situations against the cornerbacks that the Jets trot out there, there were acrobatic catches that George Pickens made. Deontay Johnson was a toenail away from a touchdown in the first half with Mitchell Trubisky. That was a great catch in the back of the end zone. And so I understand if you're frustrated that he finished the day with 2 for 11, but again, it was inches away from another big play. And even Pat Freiermuth, like I think Kenny Pickett is more willing to take shots over the middle of the field too. Not the strongest arm, not the biggest dude. His other interception that was near the line of scrimmage, he drifted back in the pocket 15 yards and then threw it for all of his might. Bounced off his wide receiver's hands and into the, again, a Jets defensive back. So what I don't understand with this, though, is if Mitch, in your eyes, could play so bad in the first two quarters that you get to halftime and you're just going to say, okay, we need a spark. Now it's time for Kenny Pickett. Mike Tomlin should have just started the guy from the start of this game. You know, had 10 days to groom him as a starting quarterback and instead waited until the game while they were winning it. They could have smashed the Jets in the first half with the way Zach Wilson was playing then. And instead, they lost the game because they waited too long to pivot over to Kenny Pickett, if that makes sense.
Yeah. As a college prospect, I always thought that people didn't give Kenny Pickett enough credit for like kind of being a playmaker of some sorts, even though he's not going to be like Justin Herbert standing in the pocket and just throw a laser beam to the sideline. He gets out there and moves. And that's why he had 2 touchdowns here. But I think that this can be at least a watchable offense. And we'll see if it can get George Pickens going or keep Deontay Johnson afloat. I'm hoping it's Team Pickett. Like it can't be Trubisky. Like it's the same exact stuff as it was with the Bears. Like it's been 4 games.
I will also say that it looks like Breece Hall continued his slight resurgence over Michael Carter in this backfield. 46 snaps for Hall to Michael Carter's 31 and 17 carries to Carter's 9.
Game-winning touchdown, too. And
helps.
Zach Wilson missed a 90-yard play, basically. It was a running back wheel route from Breece Hall along the right sideline, and Wilson completely underthrew him by 10 yards. Again, I know, and you should be, Jets fans are going to be ecstatic with this comeback victory. See it for four quarters first, and at least for me, speaking to myself, for Zach Wilson, but that second half was extremely promising. Okay, we'll move on from that game, go on over to the Chargers at the Texans. More points here, gentlemen. And most importantly, Austin Eckler, who we had been down on for the first 3 weeks, goes 13 carries, 60 yards, two touchdowns on the ground, then six catches, 49 yards, and a score in the air. Everything's right in the world when Austin Eckler scores three touchdowns.
The best part were all of them came from 10 yards out, so we didn't really have to worry about the goal line usage here. Now, it's like a positive and a negative. Like some of the things where they did get Sony Michel involved, they still got Joshua Kelly involved, but he looked explosive in his offense. I think is going to be able to hold up. The left tackle stayed in there, held his own, seemed better than Storm Norton did. And Justin Herbert is just going to be too good in general. So lots of check down opportunities here. Mike Williams had a bunch of plays over the middle. And I think it was a positive game for the Chargers, who nearly almost charged themselves, but were able to figure it out in the end.
Yeah, I guess my biggest question, because it was a massive conversation heading into this contest of, well, the Chargers offense has not been great. They lose their premier left tackle. And how was Joe Lombardi going to adjust? Can we learn something from this game, or is it just the Houston Texans? You know, like, yeah. Is it that easy and simple of an answer of like, hey, these were positives. Austin Eckler, Mike Williams, Gerald Everett going 5 for 61 when one touchdown after we called that.
Yeah. To me, it was just Justin Herbert playing excellent. He had lots of hole shots down the sideline, over the middle. The Gerald Everett stuff was a backside just seam touchdown, just using his eyes to get back over there. Gerald Everett did have a drop on 3rd and 4, but he is being used like a tight end one. Mike Williams, there's some underneath catches early on in the game, got to a couple end zone targets, big plays over the middle, like I said. And then going back to Brandon Staley, it was 4th and 1. They were up 3 points. They were on their own 44-yard line with 5 minutes left in the game. I think most NFL coaches punt the ball there. He goes for it, ends up getting a first down with a little design stuff to Austin Eckler out in the flat. So the defense at the end of the game did not hold up. Even Davis Mills was able to move the ball. There was a huge, huge Damian Pierce run. We'll get to that in a second. So the Chargers as a team looked all right. It was the Texans at the end of the day, but I think ultimately this was just, even with all the chaos around him, Justin Herbert is still so damn good. Even when he has all these injuries around him, he's still going to be able to move the ball.
Yeah, it's quite a choice after what we've seen with Justin Herbert, the injury that he's dealing with, throwing the ball 39 times and running the ball 27 times and, you know, then putting up 27 points in the first half and keeping that up for the entire contest. Okay, let's go ahead, Diggle.
It is the Texans, so I do want to take it with a grain of salt.
For sure.
But from what I saw as well, because I onslaughted the Chargers in DFS, so like I watched this game very closely, Herbert was slinging it across the field. It looked like vintage Herbert. Also, I did not see Josh Palmer get injured. Correct me if I'm wrong, Hayden, but DeAndre Carter operated in two wide sets today.
Whoa.
Josh Palmer did. He was on the sideline getting his ankle taped up.
Okay.
Stuff. He was kind of in and out of the game. So I wouldn't read into that until we have more clarity on the situation. Just going into this game, as a reminder, Keenan Allen had a setback. He was limited. They try to push him and then he gets set back. So we don't know where he's going to be for next week. But I think Josh Palmer should be in lineups. He did have some type of injury. We'll see how severe it is after the game.
Okay. Flip side. Texans, Davis Mills, 26 of 35, two touchdowns, two interceptions. Is that kind of what we get from him? Like some really nice throws and then some backbreaking turnovers and plays that, you know, it makes us wonder if this is just going to be a one-year experiment for the Texans going into the season with Davis Mills as their starting quarterback.
I mean, they're 0-3-1. I would be pretty surprised if Davis Mills is the quarterback next year. He seems like a totally fine backup level player. The Damian Pierce touchdown, to me, was some of the worst linebacker play I could possibly imagine. Just one of them couldn't shed a block. The other one ran up a hole that didn't exist. And it was an easy Damian Pierce touchdown. He always looked explosive to me. This was the first time that he's ever been able to like actually break a tackle and get out in the open space by himself. Has a great game, 131 yards, one touchdown. Rex Burkhead was involved in passing situations. That's why he caught five passes, but he did not get a carry. So the fumble issues from last week didn't really carry over here. It was the same exact role for Damian Pierce. He's going to be the guy on the ground, and then Rex Burkhead's going to be playing the passing downs. Brandon Cooks had a pretty solid day, 7 catches, 57 yards, and a touchdown. He also had a defensive passing interference where he would have scored probably a 50-yard touchdown, and then he also had a 22-yard catch called back. So he looked good, but even he was a couple plays away from having a much bigger game. And then Davis Mills, probably his best pass of the day. Nico Collins isolated, good move down the field, was able to create separation for a 58-yard touchdown that nearly was, or 58-yard completion that was nearly a touchdown. So this was like classic Texans. You could have a big week from Damian Pierce at any given week. Brandon Cooks is still clearly the number one. Davis Mills does just enough to keep Brandon Cooks in that wide receiver two, wide receiver three range. And then Nico Collins is better in best ball and unpredictable.
Weird question, but how did the Chargers defense look without Joey Bosa? Like, were they able to generate pressure?
Not really. Davis Mills was sacked like four times, but Davis Mills always takes some pretty bad sacks here.
And Texans offensive line is damn good, you know?
Yeah, Laramie Tunsil's an absolute
genius. Kenyon Green's been really good too.
Yeah, so I think they're fine. Like,
yeah,
it's just the ground game, man. Like that Damian Pierce touchdown.
And talk really to me about that 75-yarder.
I mean, Kenneth Murray ran up a hole that he had no business going to, and then the other linebacker couldn't shed a block, got pushed back about 8 yards against a tight end one-on-one, and then their safety missed a tackle, and then he's off and running. So, yeah.
All right. John Daigle, you're up next. Let's flip on over to the Cleveland Browns and the Atlanta Falcons. Falcons maybe shockingly win this contest 23-20, especially when you consider that Nick Chubb had a similar day to what we've seen Nick Chubb all season long, 19 carries, 118 yards and a score. So if they absorb 177 rushing yards on the Atlanta Falcons, how do they come back and win it? By also more than matching with their own rushing totals of 202 yards on 35 carries.
It goes beyond that as well. 400 yards of total offense, 71 plays, 3 red zone trips, and yet one touchdown, 20 points. They manhandled the Falcons. There were no excuses. Even Kevin Stefanski had to go to the presser afterwards and take the blame for squandering points twice inside the red zone, in particular on the one-yard line, and did not take the points again in a very close matchup that they were just dominating. Instead, ran the ball, did not go well. So, yeah, honestly, it was just poor execution by the Browns all around. You see Amari Cooper, of course, who commanded 36% of the team's targets the past 2 weeks, go into this game. He gets the battle along the boundary with AJ Terrell the entire time. So it's David Njoku pops up, which is really confidence. David Njoku has now put together after receiving tight end one usage behind the scenes in the first 2 weeks. That production is now flowering in the last 2 weeks as well. So at least we're getting that late tight end breakout that we thought we were initially. Was also hammered the ball in the first two drives in particular, had a 20 and 25 yard catch on the first possession, and really not only just squandering points, but it does also come down to the Falcons capitalizing on the Browns' mistakes, not just in play calling, but Njoku, for example, fumbled, and that became a 13-yard touchdown run for Cordarrelle Patterson to take a 10-0 lead for the Falcons with 1:20 left in the first quarter. Patterson's usage was all over the place as I slowly moved to the Falcons side, but we'll talk about that when we discuss their offense.
Well, talk to me about the Falcons, because it's almost upside down here, right? Like from what we've seen from them this season, the most reliable players, obviously Cordarrelle Patterson, but he's even the third leading rusher on this team with 9 carries, 38 yards and a score. Meanwhile, we've had very consistent performances from Drake London this season, yet 7 targets, 2 receptions, 17 yards against a defensive secondary that's been torched so far this season. And then Kyle Pitts, still just 4 targets, 1 reception, and 25 yards.
And for Cordarrelle Patterson, I think very clearly injured, now has just 2 targets in his last 3 games. He got 1 second-half touch in this contest. At one point, Josh, I don't know if you've heard this already, Marcus Mariota throws an interception. He's now turned the ball over in every single game. We talked about this last week. The benching is coming eventually. But after they get the ball back post this interception, Arthur Smith calls 14 run plays in a row to take the ball out of Mariota's hands.
And it worked.
He leans on Tyler Allgeier and Caleb Huntley. Wow. Who 8 of his 10 carries came in the second half as a bruising clock killer in place of Cordarrelle Patterson between the tackles. And he did explode for a touchdown. But overall, this is not great for fantasy.
Okay. I've thought, Hayden, that Tyler Allgeier has been extremely average when entering the contest this season in spot duty. But today it's 10 carries for 84 yards. And then Caleb Huntley, as Daigle said, 10 carries for 56 yards in a score. Like, we love CPAT, but if he was
hurt.
Broken
he was
a little bit, I know, yeah. But isn't this one of these cases potentially where, hey, these backups ran well, they have earned more opportunities moving forward?
I would be stunned. I think CPAT's look so good that once he gets over this injury, now we are talking about an older running back who knows how well he's going to adjust here, but he looked good today too. I mean, CPAT had scored a touchdown at 38 yards on 9 carries as well. I am looking at the box score right now, and Marcus Mariota had a second percentile completion percentage over expected, second percentile, and they won the game. So I just want to watch this game. I don't know if it was Drake London's fault, Kyle Pitts' fault, Marcus Mariota's fault. I'm going to be watching the damn Falcons. They're 2-2. Marcus Mariota's not going to bench any time to the 2-2 Falcons.
Everyone looks up also and sees Kyle Pitts, 4 targets, now just 22 targets through the first 4 games, but they see one weekly catch. And it's easily explainable because 32% of Kyle Pitts' targets this year have come 20 plus yards downfield. That's why he pops in projections. That's why he's a ceiling player. The issue is the ceiling. It's not consistent since Marcus Mariota is bottom 5 in the league on target rate on throws 20 plus yards downfield. Kyle Pitts is being asked basically to make Hall of Fame catches every week on little volume. And if he doesn't do that, he's just going to bust every week. So this is the Kyle Pitts story right now. It's boom or bust. It's not consistency for a reason.
Yeah, to make your point, Mariota today, 97th percentile ADOT, 13.3 yards downfield. That's what you're going to get in this offense. I think it's probably the right move for the Falcons. You have these playmakers downfield. Yes, but the consistency is just, these players are just not going to be consistent. But the fact that they're at least moving the ball in general throughout the season, I think you have to chalk up as a win. You weren't expecting consistent play out of Kyle Pitts unless you thought he was going to be like just a record like breaker.
And to be honest with ourselves, this was totally unforeseen of this style of football, right? Like almost max protect, 2-man routes down the field.
Yeah.
And then we're going to turn Marcus Mariota into one of the top 3 intended air yards per attempt passers in the NFL. What?
That's kind of Tannehill-y. I mean, that's kind of like Arthur Smith Tannehill-y to an extent, just like play action, heavy protection, throw it downfield. You just got to play a little bit better.
I understand the production may not be consistent for Drake London, but he's the leading target guy in this offense. His floor is what we saw in week 1 with a 21% target share. The past 3 games, he's been over 30% of the team's targets in each of those games. Like, Drake London is the wide receiver 1 on this team.
Okay, let's jump on over to, I wanted to save this game for later, but I know everyone's going to be jumping on to the Sunday Night Football contest, and you want to hear about the Broncos running back situation. So,
and you don't want to hear about the Cowboys Commanders. So yes, I agree.
So let's go to the Raiders beating the Denver Broncos 32-23, getting their first win of the season. And now the Broncos drop to 2-2. This is one of those contests. I watched every single play and I'm not exactly sure how we arrived at this final score because 2 players on the Broncos played extremely well. This might have been Russell Wilson's, despite what the box score says, one of his best performances of the season. He opened 11 of 12 for 149 yards and 2 touchdowns in the first half. At halftime, it was 19-16 Raiders. He finished 17 of 25 for 237 and 2 scores. He was also this team's leading rusher with 29 yards and a touchdown. We got some of those vertical passes to Cortland Sutton. Most importantly, we got it to KJ Hamler down the middle of the field for 55 yards. Jerry Jeudy, even a touchdown on a 3 verts on the right side. Jerry Jeudy out of the slot and boom, he hits him there. However, also on the defensive side of the ball, Patrick Surtain, not going to say locked down Devontae Adams, but it was one of the best matchups you could see 1-to-1 all season long. Surtain was driving on targets, playing the hands, contesting the catch points. And that was a great competition. Still, Devontae Adams, despite saying that, goes out there and gets 9 catches on 13 targets for 101 yards and maybe the MVP of this contest, as Hayden has been saying all season long for the Las Vegas Raiders, is Josh Freakin' Jacobs. Mm-hmm. 28 carries, 144 yards, and two scores. I want all of you to search out this highlight that he had where he presses the left side of the hole, spins after planting that left foot back inside, makes two people miss at the line of scrimmage, has someone pull a Broncos defender his undershirt as he's running away from everyone, and goes out there, I think, for a 43-yard gain after that. Josh Jacobs is playing some high, high level of football right now, despite the questions we have about the Raiders' offense, and he by far and away was the best player on the field in this game.
All week, you'll see people cite PFF's like elusiveness and yards after contact because of games like this. He's been doing this the entire season. He's had some brutal reps on passing downs, but even today, because some of the other running backs also had some brutal reps, he catches five passes here. But yeah, you're right. Josh Jacobs is running really hard behind not so good of an offensive line here. So this is just a shout out to Josh Jacobs, who is playing in contract season and is running right over your face.
And now add the volume to that. Since week two, 60 of the team's 66 running back carries. His route participation has increased in every single game this year, leading to this week's season high, a route on 72% of Derek Carr's dropbacks. Basically the pass catching back as well. He's literally a bell cow now.
Okay. And you see two carries for Zamir White. One of those was basically the final play of the game that he gets a 22-yarder along the sideline, that Josh Jacobs was like the de facto fullback and was the eye candy. And then Zamir White has free reign on the left side. It's a one-person backfield. And it's just amazing that there was beat writer speculation and even some national media speculation that like they weren't totally in for Josh Jacobs this season. And it's so clear that he has transcended whatever Josh McDaniels usage we typically see at the running back spot. We'll get back to some of the Raiders if you have some questions there, but let's focus on the Broncos backfield because it was wonky in this contest. So Javonte Williams converts on a 4th-and-1 with about 4 minutes left in the half. He goes out for the first time after getting 6 yards on his first like 6 carries, basically. Melvin Gordon comes in for his first carry of the game, gains 7, and then loses a fumble. Basically never to be seen again. And then later on, his fourth of the season.
I couldn't believe though. I had to rewind the broadcast. I was like, he has 4 fumbles this year. That's crazy. Sorry.
Real bad. Continue. No. I was going to mention this, but it's a prevailing problem that we have seen from Melvin Gordon since his time, final few years with the Chargers. And most importantly, during his most recent years with the Denver Broncos. Now that leaves us with the questions that we have with Melvin Gordon to then Javonte Williams suffering a knee injury, being listed as questionable, and no more than 3 minutes later after that, after he gets out of the blue medical tent, he is instantly downgraded to out, seen with crutches, exiting the locker room after this contest. The first player you see, I think, after that is Mike Boone. Mike Boone for 3 carries for 20 yards. They tie in carries with the Broncos trying to come back in this contest. Mike Boone is the one that also gets a reception for 9 yards. It was Javonte Williams going to be owning this backfield until that knee injury, Hayden, because he was the better player here, but it leaves us, who knows what the significance is. It sounds based on, again, how short the questionable to outstanding was, not going to be good news for Javonte Williams moving forward.
And at least for this week, they play on Thursday Night Football, so Javonte will not be out there for that. So it just basically comes down to Melvin Gordon has the profile of somebody that can handle the load. Mike Boone really doesn't, but Melvin Gordon's been playing so bad. I mean, I always see him picking up yards and then he just fumbles the ball. To me, it's like isolated like as a fumble issue, but we'll see if they go back to him or Mike Boone. I'm guessing it's going to be a committee and they have a couple days to figure this out.
Because Mike Boone got a pretty decent contract a couple years ago with the general manager coming over from the Minnesota Vikings when Mike Boone was awesome in the preseason and a great athlete every single year and then never got his opportunity in this backfield. Melvin Gordon was the one at times last year to be the leader in carries and opportunities here. Yet every single time, even when it dropped from 70-30, 80-20, like it was going to be in this contest, he fumbles that opportunity away, Daigle. So look, we're not tied to our opinions here on the Instant Reaction Show. You have your own waiver content that comes out. But I would almost speculate that Mike Boone should be added above Melvin Gordon at this point.
I agree. The issue is what the hell is this offense? Because we saw it again for 3.5 quarters. And then and only then did Russell Wilson start moving the ball down the field. So I almost questioned if anyone can survive anyways outside of Cortland Sutton.
Yeah.
That's fair. This game, I'm looking at it, their success rate was fourth percentile. The Denver Broncos against the Raiders.
And like I said, that first half from Russ was just about as clean as possible. It didn't help, again, that fumble by Javonte Williams was returned for a touchdown. So, like, if you can, you know, subtract 6 or 7 points here from the Raiders, and it's a much closer contest. But this Raiders defense is easily one of the worst in the league. Denzel Perryman played a nice first and second quarter, then exited with his own concussion, and that probably prevented some early rushing success that the Broncos had. But there's no real excuse for this. And Russ is kind of playing the same ball, but even Russell Wilson, like, showed some youth to his game with some of his scrambling ability here. You know, I'm not exactly sure, as Daigle's point, I think, is the big picture. Where do the Broncos go from here? Because they don't really have an identity. Randy Gregory got injured in this contest too. It's just Patrick Surtain. And even again, when he plays at such a high level, you can't universally prevent the other team from, you know, scoring 30 plus points in this contest. That's tough.
I don't know what they are.
Mac Hollins continued to play on the outside. And then Darren Waller just hasn't clicked, man. Just hasn't clicked. But it's kind of back to the point with Davante Adams where there's lots of option routes and eyes on him and just waiting and waiting and waiting for him to get open. But that's exactly the usage why.
That's what this offense is. Every time you look up, it's literally just Derek Carr pedaling back and waiting for Adams to break left or right.
Yep.
Quick shout out to Derek Carr. Showed some wheels himself. 40 yards, some key scrambles on second and third downs on longer to go situations to convert those. Okay. Since I had to talk about that one, Hayden, why don't you talk about the...
For the record, you chose this game for me. I was on a golf course enjoying my time. I get the notification that Josh has selected this game for me.
Well, someone has to watch the Panthers this season other than me, and you get to watch the Arizona Cardinals beat the Carolina Panthers 26-16. I don't even know who to call out here. I mean, in the end, Kyler Murray does get home with 207 yards and 2 touchdowns and a rushing score. Marquise Brown, 688 and a touchdown. But Hayden, once again, this Cardinals offense cannot get going in the first quarter and basically in the first half. It's just an entire second half team.
Yep. 5.9 ADOT for Kyler Murray here. They had negative EPA. This was just a team that did not look very good. At one point, Kyler Murray was yelling at Cliff Kingsbury to get the plays going faster. They had to call a timeout before a delay of game. Kyler Murray throws a pick six over the middle. Very few things designed downfield. The one time that they did do it, they put Marquise Brown in the slot on the right side, not the left side.
Imagine
slot fade for, guess what? A touchdown. So they can do it. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen to this offense once DeAndre comes back, because the fear that we had with Rondale Moore came true again. Rondale Moore was schemed up. There was a brutal play, 4th and 1, and they opt to go with the fly sweep to Rondale Moore for -4 yards for a turnover on downs. Both teams started this game off with turnover on downs. That kind of sums up how these offenses were playing. But for the most part, everything was underneath. There was one deep route for Rondale Moore that drew a target, but for the most part, it was all underneath stuff. So by far, Marquise Brown's their best playmaker. Zach Ertz is good enough over the middle to kind of catch and fall down. He had 1 yards after the catch play near the sideline. Finds the end zone. But even for Kyler Murray, everything seems so damn difficult for him, and even more difficult for James Conner, who's in a little bit of a rotation more than I was kind of expecting here. So it's a win on the road, but this was not like promising.
Basically, every single thing that Cliff Kingsbury tried to draw up just didn't work in this game. You know, and once again, you get to the second half and you try to put everything on Kyler Murray's shoulders and he climbs out of it for you. I mean, it's so rough watching this offense. And maybe the most frustrating part is, as soon as Rondale Moore is back, as you alluded to, he's a full-time player. And Greg Dortch, who has been, let's face it, been better than Rondale Moore has ever shown in the league so far in the 3 games that we've seen from Greg Dortch, just gets instantly put to right bench and barely played in this contest. Like, I would love to see Rondale Moore have to show something to earn the starting gig. And I don't know what the snap percentages are, but it just felt like Greg Dortch was completely miscast once again as soon as Rondale's back in the lineup.
Yeah, he's not going to matter. He becomes the 4th or 5th target on this offense. This offense just isn't moving the ball. Like Rodney Hudson snapping the ball over his head. Like everything's just sloppy just in general for this team. I do wonder if Kyler Murray is a buy low just because I think I'm going to like what this offense looks like compared to what it is now. When Marquise Brown perhaps is the vertical slot player, that's when Kyler Murray was at his best, when Christian Kirk was a vertical slot player. That might be a better role for Marquise Brown individually. Let DeAndre Hopkins run those hard routes as the X receiver, contested catches, and get some verticality to this offense. We haven't seen any of it so far. Maybe when DeAndre Hopkins gets back, this offense will look a little bit better. So maybe buy low on Kyler Murray, but right now it's just stuck in the mud still.
And to your point, Rondell Moore out-snapped Greg Dortch 65-27 in this game. Literally came back as the de facto underneath receiver and just returned to the role, moved Dortch to the bench.
What is there to say about the Carolina Panthers?
Nothing.
I mean,
can we each should go through like one most unremarkable thing about them. You go with yours first, then I'll give mine.
I have two that I have to say in both. First of all, for Baker Mayfield, 9 deflected passes this game. He was getting Mutombo'd like all the time. And I would just say for DJ Moore in this offense, a squeaky wheel game is 6 for 50 without a touchdown.
It's so true. They tried to get it for him.
That's a squeaky wheel right there. 6 for 50.
And even when they try to create all of this, you know, fun stuff, they were giving Rashard Higgins an end around that then was going to be pitched to DJ Moore that probably would have gone for a touchdown because that side of the field is completely wide open. Rashard Higgins bungles it, drops it on the floor, and then it's a turnover. This offense can't do anything right. And to that note, in the first 7 quarters of last week's 4 games, or 4, and then this game's first 3, if you eliminate Laviska Shenault's fluke 60-yard touchdown last week, the Carolina Panthers defense outscored the offense. Again, the Carolina Panthers defense has outscored the offense over the last 7 quarters, 14 points to 12 points. It's a Baker Mayfield problem. It's a Ben McAdoo problem. It's an offensive line problem. It's a Matt Rhule problem. Like, there's not just one person. But if I had to put it on one person, hey, now I put it on Baker Mayfield because he's awful.
Yeah, he's – I haven't seen him this inaccurate. Like, I've seen questionable decision-making and, like, you can't, like, run a complete offense with him. But to me, he always, like, was at least able to throw the ball with some accuracy. This year, it's – all over the place. He seemed like he's having to step into throws extra hard and is just firing balls over their head. And that makes me think that hopefully if there is something they can take away from this game is late in the game, there was a ton of Christian McCaffrey targets. And guess what happened? They kept moving the ball. Christian McCaffrey at the end ends up mossing a guy for a touchdown. But I'm hoping that they can say, hey, look, all these perimeter throws to the outside keep getting Mutombo'd. We can't throw the ball downfield to DJ Moore. What if we just said, we're going to be the option route team to Christian McCaffrey. Hopefully that's a big takeaway. He ended up being an elite RB1 again because of those late game targets.
It goes back to, though, Baker Mayfield being accurate on those targets. He's 33rd. Entering the week, he was 33rd in completion rate from a clean pocket. So even when he's not under pressure, it doesn't matter. He's still not completed those early passes. Everyone complains about DJ Moore's catch rate, but 63% of DJ Moore's targets entering this week were within 9 yards of the line of scrimmage. Baker Mayfield just doesn't hit him. Today, only one of his targets were 20 plus yards downfield. And as you see in the box score, it just didn't matter because you still need a quarterback who can complete the pass. Baker's completely broken.
Yeah. And it doesn't get easier. This is what we said heading into this contest.
Yep.
They face the 49ers, the Rams, and the Buccaneers over the next 3 games.
I wouldn't even say this game, he was under duress, you know?
No.
Like, right. He took 2 sacks. It seemed like he was just...
This is why I tried to force you to watch it live, because it's infuriating. Like, Baker's awful. He might be the worst quarterback in the league right now.
If I don't show up to the show next week, everyone will know whose turn it was to watch the Panthers.
It's so bad. But at least, like you said, CMC got receiving opportunity when it's been like 2 receptions and 3 receptions and been relying on 23 carries to get him home. Like, it happened when they were down by 16 points, but, you know, 9 receptions, 81 yards and a score. So, like you said, hopefully they go back to the drawing board and say, oh, this worked in that part. Let's do this more from the start of games. But I don't trust them. They freaking suck.
Yeah. They're not going to make it out of the season.
Mm-hmm. Cowboys. Commanders.
Speaking of a team not making it out of the season.
I keep punting some of the good stuff, so hopefully people continue to watch and watch and watch. We'll get to the Eagles and the Jaguars in a moment. Talk to me about this game. Daigle, because I mean, does Cooper Rush, like Cooper Rush, 25-10, the Dallas Cowboys win. He goes 15-27 for 223 and two scores. Back-to-back really strong games for CeeDee Lamb, 6 for 97 and touchdown here.
It is still amazing to me that this is a player they cut before week one, knowing no one would care to put in on waivers for him. It's Cooper Rush. Who cares? And now he's set for life as a career backup quarterback with the Cowboys most likely moving forward. I think it's a combination of Cooper Rush playing out the game plan that is in front of them, and also good coaching from McCarthy and good play calling by Kellen Moore, just making life as easy as possible. It's also been a couple easy games, honestly. The Commanders never pushed back in this one at any point. Carson Wentz has now averaged less than 5 yards per attempt in two consecutive games. The wheels have already fallen completely off for him. For the Cowboys, though, I think the most shocking takeaway is that both Michael Gallup and Dalton Schultz returned to the lineup as full-time players. Michael Gallup ran around 85% of dropbacks. Dalton Schultz got in there for a route on 79% of dropbacks. They were just there, like back in the three wide personnel, like nothing happened at all. That was so shocking to see. CeeDee Lamb still getting fed a high target share. It now has a 34.5% target share from Cooper Rush the past three games. So living on volume, although it may be inaccurate volume, but it doesn't matter when you're seeing that percentage of your team's targets.
Dominic Foxworth pointed this out, and Hayden, it's kind of something that we have alluded to, or like a statement I wanted to make, where in previous years, Kellen Moore has put like so much on Dak Prescott's plate where he asked him to go from like 1 to 2 to 3 and make every single perfect decision. And there's nothing easy or simple. And yet here we are seeing Cooper Rush, I'm not going to say thrive, but look like more than competent, because it feels like they are making things a bit simpler. So when Dak Prescott, who might come back this week against the Los Angeles Rams, hopefully they take some of those and implement them here rather than, again, putting so much perfection and expecting so much from Dak Prescott on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch that. I think the other big takeaway here, it seems like they have a left tackle, you know, like before it seemed like we had all these on off splits because the Cowboys left tackle situation was kind of always in flux. It seems like they have a little bit of something with him. Cooper Rush only has one sack today. So all of a sudden, once Dak Prescott gets back in the lineup, he's going to have Michael Gallup back at full health. Noah Brown has looked better than what anyone expected as the number three for the rest of the season. Dalton Schultz. And then they have some better depth for long term. So Cowboys look all right right now.
And I would note that Noah Brown got injured today, like a lot of players. So just something to monitor. But again, since Gallup was already out there doing what he does, claiming DPIs downfield, could have had a second touchdown as well. His first touchdown was almost a breakdown as he was running across the back of the end zone, and Cooper Rush found him just in the corner, showing rapport early on. But yeah, Gallup, I expect to probably be used even more in week 5 if Brown can't go.
Okay, Commanders. Curtis Samuel got his standard 7 targets, 4 receptions for 38 yards. So none of them were in the end zone. So he didn't have a big day. Meanwhile, I thought it was a really nice throw that Carson Wentz had to Jahan Dotson for his touchdown. But that might have been the only positive offensive play the entire day for Washington. Like, that's truly it.
The one constant is Curtis Samuel now leading Washington in targets for the 4th consecutive week. Just continues to at least give you volume and a high floor weekly. Jahan Dotson got there. But again, this is his 3rd touchdown on 3 end zone targets. So like, since he and Terry McLaurin, we talk about this every week, cannibalize one another at the same area of the field with their 15 depth of target. Like, Dotson's only getting there because he's scoring touchdowns on lower volume. So that's not a player I'm really chasing at all. McLaurin is still struggling to get there weekly as well behind Samuel. I think the biggest takeaway, though, is that not only was Jonathan Williams concertedly involved on the first drive, it is very clear that this is a three-headed backfield. Antonio Gibson does not play in negative game script, which is a disaster since this team is perpetually in negative game scripts. So actually, like, we're losing even more usage, we assume, from Gibson moving forward.
And Brian Robinson might play next week. Next week. So if you can get anything for Antonio Gibson, do it. Any, like, get any startable flex option, accept it immediately.
Yeah, let's rewind. I mean, Antonio Gibson had a nice first couple weeks this season, but this team was most likely going to go into the season with Brian Robinson as the starting running back and had to quickly adjust. I'm so happy that we're going to see Brian Robinson on the field, hopefully this week. All signs indicate that's going to happen. I thought he was really solid in the preseason at creating on his own and doing and being the reliable runner between the tackles that Antonio Gibson really hasn't proven to be over the last two seasons.
I see Damian Harris.
I love that.
Yeah.
Two Alabama boys. Why not? Philadelphia Eagles 29, Jacksonville Jaguars 21. Jaguars opened this game with a 14-0 start. 14-0. Eagles close at 29-7. Let's start from the top, though. Pick six in Jalen Hurts' own territory on 2nd-and-7. Hurts tries to force it over to Zach Pascal. It's tipped. Andre Sisco takes it out to the house. Andre Sisco, who, by the way, Urban Meyer didn't even know who his name was last season. Then that was the Jaguars' 9th forced turnover of the season, which already tied last year's mark, just to put into context how much better this Jaguars team is under Urban Meyer. They follow that up with an 80-yard touchdown drive that included Trevor Lawrence hitting our favorite, Swagnew, Jamal Agnew, on a fun double stick to the deep corner that really forced the Eagles safeties to cover so much ground they couldn't get there because of a great throw by Trevor Lawrence. And then he followed it with a Jamal Agnew yo-yo motion where he came back in, then motioned back out, and with no one following him, it was a wide-open walk-in score. So I mentioned the turnovers in the favor of the Jaguars to open this, because then it completely flipped on over to the Eagles' side of that. 5 total Trevor Lawrence turnovers in this contest, including 4 lost fumbles. 4. Jawan Taylor got abused by Hassan Reddick, who had 2 sack fumbles of his own. Trevor Lawrence had this weird 4th down try on 4th and 1 and just mishandled it and couldn't hold it, crossing the 1st down marker. Like, rain was a huge factor in a lot of ways. No wide receivers were wearing gloves. No one could really hold on to the football. And it really started coming down there in the 2nd quarter. And at that point is where the Eagles' ground game started taking over. Like, Miles Sanders goes 27 carries for 134 yards and 2 scores. Jalen Hurts has 16 carries of his own. And such a clear 4th down and a important 4th down conversion that he had went down 14-0. That was like a 4th and goal from the 6-yard line, and he has a quarterback draw for a score. We can get to it, but there are so many missed opportunities in the Jaguars' end and all of the big-time opportunities that the Eagles had. They're just a better football team at this moment, a more experienced football team at this moment, and they're able to stack up and succeed in those where the Jaguars faltered a little bit. And really, they're one of their biggest contests, obviously, in competitions this season.
What immediately stood out to me was not only Miles Sanders in the box score, but even without Boston Scott, we now saw him play over 60% of the snaps in this game for the first time all year. And his share of the team's running back carries and backfield touches overall have increased every single week to season highs this week. And I would imagine if he continues performing like this, the usage just continues to grow where there's no need to really get anyone else heavily involved.
Yeah. And even more impressive because Jordan Mailata left really early in this contest with a what looked like a right arm injury. So missing their left tackle, they had number 63 come in because Andre Dillard's been missing this season too. And it felt like they didn't miss a beat. It's really cool that the Eagles are able, because they were going to be pass first here because they've been pass first through the first 3 weeks of the season, but immediately pivot in game. Or maybe this morning when the weather started pouring, saying, okay, let's go back to some of our really fun and cool running concepts, because this is what we did for the final 8 games of last season, 12 games of last season, and we did some of our best work. So it's rare to find that in a team that's able to do that from week to week like the Eagles are able to do here.
They're multiple. That makes them dangerous. You know, yep. They can win in different environments. They ran the ball 50 times today. So that's why you're looking at your Jaguars box scores. They had 19 carries and only 23 pass attempts. So even though Christian Kirk had a 39% target share, was able to do basically nothing. I'm assuming that Mother Nature had some involvement there. But to me, it was, they couldn't get the Eagles off the damn field. You can't win games if they're running it 50 times down your throat.
And again, missed opportunities too for the Jaguars to fail to extend some drives. Like, Trevor Lawrence had a 40-yard touchdown to Jamal Agnew that he just missed, that he overthrew. There was a 4th-and-3 that the Jaguars went for it, that Trevor Lawrence escaped out of the pocket, had a completely wide open field, and even Tim Jones, who was wide open down the first down marker, and the ball just fumbles out of Trevor Lawrence's hands and drops to the floor. And so it's a failed conversion. So again, all these fourth downs that the Eagles basically went for, not every single one, but most of them, they hit, and the Jaguars just did not hit theirs. Yeah, Christian Kirk actually, early on, he didn't have his first catch until I think 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Got locked up by this dude, Josiah Scott, who's the backup to the backup slot corner in Avante Maddox, because then they used Chauncey Gardner-Johnson as a deeper safety in this game. And Josiah Scott was actually drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think back in 2019 or 2020 as a fourth-round pick, was traded to this Eagles team for a six-rounder, and then sprouts up here and has a has an awesome thing.
Eagles front office is basically undefeated outside of Jalen Reagor. It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy. Yeah, I mean, it's just a tough James Robinson game, a tough Travis Etienne game, who goes 8 for 32. Jamal Agnew literally was the best player on the Jaguars.
Our guy.
And it's our guy. It's the one thing that Urban Meyer did right last year. The one thing.
He only played 18 snaps in this game, but you wouldn't know it because I swear every time I looked up at the TV, Agnew was doing something. He was on the screen more than Lawrence.
And I do want to bring this up because, again, the Jaguars were in this game throughout the entire contest. Obviously, they were up 14-0. And then when the Eagles go up 29-21, they get stopped on fourth down. The Jaguars get the ball down 8, 2 minutes to go. And literally the next play, Juwan Taylor gets run over by Hassan Reddick, who reaches over him, swats the ball out of Trevor Lawrence's hand, and then the game's over. So this is what the Eagles have done over the last few years, right, is build up this roster so you can have some game-breaking players on defense that are awesome while your offense can sustain, you know, 25 passing attempts and 50 carries and win in all phases. Like, they truly are. Jalen Hurts said it after, like, we're a really good football team. No shit. You're a really good football team right now. So Devontae Smith left portions of this contest with a right knee injury. That might be why he's just didn't have as good of a day as A.J. Brown. People should be really thankful that A.J. Brown had 5 receptions for 95 yards in this game based on the weather. It's that simple. Okay, I know none of us have watched any of these other games live. Let's ask questions as we move along. And the next one is going to be the Tennessee Titans at the Indianapolis Colts, which the Titans improved to 2-2, 24-17 over the Colts. I don't think there's any shocks here on the Titans side with Derrick Henry, 114 yards and a score after what he did last week. I know that Treylon Burks left on a cart in this game. Really, the biggest question that I want to find out this week is Jonathan Taylor, who I think also left this game with a potential high ankle sprain and only closed it with 20 carries for 42 yards. That is extremely significant, not just with the injury, but the lack of efficiency before exiting.
I think the
Colts play Thursday night. So pick up Naeem Hines. He's going to be headlining the waiver columns and all that stuff. He will be in the preseason. They used him somewhat as a feature back a little bit. We'll see if that holds up. I don't even know who their RB3 is. I know it was at one point like Philip Lindsay or something like that, but Naeem Hines is going to be in our lives.
I believe they have Tyson Williams on their practice squad too. I have to check that. It'll all be in the waiver wire column at 444.com tomorrow afternoon. But more importantly, since Treylon Burks got carted off, we are just assuming he's going to miss the rest of the year. Kyle Phillips will also be in the waiver column. Only played 2 snaps this game as he continues getting healthy. But remember, week 1, he led the league in target per route run rate among all players who ran at least 20 routes. So I want to be high on Kyle Phillips moving forward. And then you glossed over Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry has 11 targets now the past two weeks. 6 and 5 targets. Like, they're actually getting involved more. I saw Fantasy Life's Dwayne McFarland also reference that Derrick Henry played in the 2-minute drill today. Like, they know, because they really only trust Robert Woods right now, that they have to have someone else step up, and they're using Derrick Henry the way we've always wanted.
I did want to bring up that since we mentioned that the Titans secondary has been torched over and over and over again, they kind of did get torched again. 27 receptions for 356 yards in this game. However, that was all going to a bunch of random players. And Mo Alie-Cox for 85 yards. Alec Pierce for 80 yards. Kylan Granson for 62 yards. Even Paris Campbell got there for 43 yards. And that's why Michael Pittman is all the way down there at 31. So, like, the yards per target stat that we brought up, where it's still 9.9 to opposing wide receivers, all of those targets still equaled big production for the passing game for the Colts. However, it was going to a bunch of tight ends and none of them were going in the direction of Michael Pittman, but maybe we can look into that. I know Matt Ryan, again, probably played a really bad game. Like, I saw some big frustrations out of him once again. Okay, let's go all the way back to Thursday Night Football then. Let's go to the Miami Dolphins and the Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals get back on track 27-15 in this contest. Let's first focus on them. Daigle, T. Higgins, 7-for-124 in a score. Ja'Marr Chase, 4-for-81. If you look at like their last 16 games played together in the regular season or whatever, T. Higgins is actually outproducing Ja'Marr Chase. I'm not saying that to be critical of Ja'Marr Chase. I'm saying that for everyone to recalibrate their opinion of who T. Higgins is and his standing in this offense, because it really is a 1A to 1A.
Agree. I still think we blow the situation out of proportion because I wonder how much T. Higgins would do if it were not for Ja'Marr Chase on the other side. He's a good player, but Ja'Marr Chase certainly helps alleviate pressure. But at the same time, we know, like we saw last year, there was this month-long stint, everyone forgets, where the Bengals were still trying to learn what to do since they couldn't throw the ball deep to Ja'Marr Chase. And so towards weeks 10 through 14, I think it was, you look and Ja'Marr Chase has a 5.5 depth of target because they kept him closer to the line of scrimmage. That's kind of what's happening right now, as they're allowing T. Higgins to roam downfield, and they're keeping Ja'Marr Chase closer to the line of scrimmage. Thus, he's delivering a floor, but he's not the wide receiver that a lot of people drafted as the number three wide receiver off the board. So finding his ceiling again is a concern right now. I think it's also worth noting that Tyler Boyd, his two big catches came whenever T. Higgins got knocked out of the game. T. Higgins did return, but until that point, Boyd was held catchless, I believe.
I think your point at the front of Ja'Marr Chase helping T. Higgins is true because of that big T. Higgins play that we saw for 59 yards. It was almost supposed to at least have one safety to help out on that side, maybe, but they had both safeties on the side of Ja'Marr Chase, literally on that section of the field, and T. Higgins in a true one-on-one. So they still had two safeties back, but yet it was three defensive backs on the section of Ja'Marr Chase's side, and then T. Higgins went deep. I will say, Daigle, like, if teams still start playing more and more and more too high stuff, then T. Higgins has a real path every single week to get there. And I think Ja'Marr Chase, I'm not saying is struggling with this so far, but I think he's adjusting more and more versus what T. Higgins is doing. But that's just my amateur opinion.
Well, who's struggling right now is Joe Mixon because of how poor this offensive line is at blocking. Mixon right now is the RB16 in fantasy points per game. The issue is he's getting workhorse usage. He has a career high 15% target share. He's pacing for a career high in receptions by a mile at season's end. He is the pass catching back. He has 9 consecutive games running a route on over half of Joe Burrow's dropbacks. But the rushing efficiency is not coming along because he's getting knocked behind the line of scrimmage basically every single carry.
Yeah, I'm going to guess in the fantasy usage model, he's going to be and remain the RB1 overall in fantasy usage. 4 targets, 24 carries, the goal line back as well. It's been a weird run for Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon historically has been an efficient rusher. He breaks a lot of tackles and all that stuff. So I don't know if something's up with Joe Mixon, if it's the offensive line. But right now, for the most part, if you have elite RB usage in an elite offense, you want him. So I'm going to keep calling him a buy low. He did score a touchdown this last game, so it's not really buying that low. But I still think I would be ranking him as a top 5 running back for the rest of the way.
Hopefully it's something with the offensive line that they just have to gel since they have three new starters on this team, and that is just something you pick up as you go along. It's just kind of shocking that last year he was so much more efficient with worse arguable talents along the offensive line. But I think as a whole, they're figuring out it's not just easy to go out there and get three new starters and think that we've improved the group.
We may have done a little bit of hyping up like Ted Karras and Lyle Collins too. Like, they were available.
Especially
they
Lyle
were available.
Collins.
We shouldn't have bolstered them up. Yeah. They were just on the street. Whatever.
Okay. Dolphins. Obviously there is the big conversation with Tua Tagovailoa. Glad he seemingly is doing okay now. Who the heck knows how much time he is going to miss? We are still waiting on the NFL and NFLPA investigation into everything. What can we see from with like Teddy Bridgewater as quarterback? I know that this is all the way back from Thursday Night Football, but Tyreek Hill got there with 10 for 160. Meanwhile, Jalen Waddle, 2 for for 39. I thought Teddy was kind of cooking there at moments, but then obviously let them down with the, I did tweet way too early. Never tweet during games is what you tell yourself. And then through that interception, that backbreaking interception at the end.
I don't think anything structurally from this offense changes too much. I think Teddy Bridgewater could do a pretty good Tua Tagovailoa impression. The numbers won't be as good because of how efficient this offense was doing. They were like playing at outlier levels. But I think Teddy Bridgewater could run the offense pretty similarly.
Yeah. And I kind of trust Mike McDaniel to like set them up, even if Teddy like has some deficiencies in certain areas. If he's not hitting the same exact plays that Tua is in practice, to adjust and play into the strength that Teddy is showing in practice, if that makes sense, Daigle.
Tyreek Hill hasn't dipped below a 20% target share on the season yet, either in any game. He continues to be the number one wide receiver in this offense, so I don't think that goes away at all. The real takeaway is that McDaniel continues to lessen on Chase Edmonds as we move along. Yeah. Maybe Edmonds is the goal line back after two goal line carries in week three. Maybe. I still don't want to say that either. I think he just happened to be in on the situation. But what we've seen is Mostert's route participation grow in every single game, leading to a season high route on 64% of dropbacks on Thursday night. And also Mostert has handled 70% of the team's backfield touches in two of his last three games. He is the starting running back. It's not 1A, 1B. It is Raheem Mostert. And then maybe Chase Edmonds inside the five, which is still odd considering Chase Edmonds only had six career goal line carries coming into the year.
Yeah.
Edmonds has been one of the worst running backs in the NFL this year.
Like his rushing yards over expected is like negative 60 or something. Like really by far and away the worst in the league at that. It does help them if Tua is out of this contest for Teddy Bridgewater to get the New York Jets in his opening game as a starter. Okay. Next up, let's go to the do we have to do this one? We do. The Chicago Bears and the New York Giants. I did not watch this one. I guess my only opinion is, hey, Justin Fields took six sacks, but at least he had 174 passing yards, including a 56-yard deep shot to Darnell Mooney. He had 23 yarders to Trevon Wesco. Khalil Herbert was able to step in here for, again, the 20 opportunities that we saw and hoped that he got. And Justin Fields, again, had seven carries for 52 yards. So maybe he is progressing a little bit with responsibilities here, because through 4 weeks, it certainly has felt like that something is open. I don't trust myself to hit it. But again, that completion percentage is just at 50% here.
22 passes is an improvement, I guess. There's that.
Six sacks. I can't say anything about his performance here because I did not watch it. Meanwhile, on the Giants, I mean, Saquon's inevitable. 31 carries, 146 yards, zero touchdowns on the ground, another 16 yards in the air. And they're trotting out as their leading receivers in this game and putting up 20 points and improving to 3-1, the Giants. Daniel Bellinger, Tanner Hudson, Darius Slayton, and then Richie James goes 1-9. 82 receiving yards in totality here, and they are 3-1. This is a pretty damn fine coaching job.
You definitely know? Definitely good coaching. They got Tyrod Taylor in there. They both leave injured. We'll see what their statuses are for the next week. But, I mean, to me, Saquon, definitely top five overall player rest of the season. This is the opportunity for Kadarius Toney. He didn't play this week. Hopefully he comes back next week, because Richie James didn't even play that much this week. You know, it was a bunch of players that we weren't even projecting to be played. So, I mean, hold on to him for one more week, I promise.
Yep. Khalil Herbert still in there. 20 of the team's 26 running back carries as well. This is a run-heavy team, both in negative and positive game script. That's what they want to do. Saquon, though, those 31 carries you mentioned are actually his career high. 27 was his previous high.
Mm. Damn. So weren't there series and portions of this game where they literally didn't have a quarterback? Like Saquon was taking quarterback snaps?
Yes. Yeah, they were using Daniel Jones as a wide receiver. They had him in so he can call the plays, and then Saquon would be wildcat. So, yeah. They win. They beat the Bears.
Easy to talk about because there's only one player.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, it's pretty cool that Brian Daboll has his team at 3-1. Like, they are not fun other than Saquon because they have no one offensively. Yet, he is able to change, and I know Mike Cass is calling plays, but change – even week to week at times, series to series at times, depending on who is available, and they're still playing winning football. Yes, it's the Bears. The Bears are also 2-1 heading into this contest and had beaten better teams, you know? Crazy. Football's wild. Okay, two more games, then we're going to get out of here. Minnesota Vikings at New Orleans Saints. Dago, I got to be honest with you. Hayden and I didn't get to watch this game at all because we were doing a show this morning. Did you get to tune in with the Minnesota Vikings 28-25 winning in this contest? Dalvin Cook off injury, 20 carries, 76 yards. And most importantly, whatever usage you can impart in us with Justin Jefferson, 13 targets, 10 receptions, 147 yards, roasting Marshawn Lattimore.
Adam Thielen also tweaked his ankle at one point. We'll monitor it moving forward. But yeah, just the target share you come to expect from Justin Jefferson. Basically a two-man show here. Kirk Cousins didn't even have his best game. The Saints kept themselves in this one throughout, basically via defense and Chris Olave. That's probably the best answer. Taysom Hill involved like we expected. They pulled out the kitchen sink for this one, knowing that Kamara and Michael Thomas were both out. What do you do? I was actually shocked to see Olave record accurate targets and still get hammered targets over Jarvis Landry. I thought that maybe Olave, with the air yards everyone continues citing, it wouldn't have mattered, but they actually changed Olave's the way he plays, and he did get a few accurate deep targets too, but they moved him for more shallow crossing routes as well. So that was very, very confident in him moving forward. That was good to see.
It was like the same usage. Josh made a good point. And I think it was maybe Matt Harmon talking about how Darnell Mooney with Andy Dalton was over the middle, lower A dot. And that's just because that's how Andy Dalton plays versus Jameis Winston versus Justin Fields. And that's why those evened out. Jarvis Landry playing through an ankle injury too. So that was certainly helping Olave.
I know that they lost, but could an argument be made that Andy Dalton might be better for this team in general? Where he goes 20 of 28 for 236 and a score, because Jameis has like objectively been bad this year. You know, it's fun. We like him because he's launching these passes down the field, but from series to series, you're not exactly sure what you're getting. And maybe this team might know what they're getting from Andy Dalton drive to drive.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure. I want to watch this game.
Okay. And we'll close.
Taysom Hill tied in 15 in points per game.
Patriots at Packers to close this one. Brian Hoyer starts this game for the New England Patriots. He does not finish this game after going 5 of 6 for 37 yards. I believe he also exited with a head injury. Bailey Zappe comes in 10 of 15, 99 yards and a score. Ramondre Stevenson, 14 carries, 66 yards. Damien Harris, the most disrespected running back in the NFL, 18 carries, 86 yards, and a score. But maybe most importantly for the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers attempts 35 passes, 2 touchdowns, 251 yards. Alan Lazard takes over as his team's number one wide receiver with 6 receptions, 116 yards. And Romeo Doubs, 5 for 47 on your sheet for a score, and had another one fall out of his hands that would have been a deep, deep shot of, I think, about 39 or 45 yards
on third down to put the Packers ahead. Rodgers went for the jugular and got him. Doubs just came down on the ball on the ground. Thus was not a touchdown.
So while Christian Watson was back in this game, and Christian Watson had a rushing score and was a key kind of part of this, because he was the jet action that we've seen Aaron Jones run in the past. And now with him keeping that role and scoring a touchdown off of it, teams will have to be honest with it and responsible with it moving forward. It's pretty clear, though, Daigle, Alan Lazard, Romeo Doubs, both at the very least flex to wide receiver 3 options moving forward.
Doubs stayed in on 2 wide sets, ran just 1 fewer route than Lazard. They didn't budge him at all for Christian Watson, which was what my concern coming into the week was. Christian Watson only 7 routes, and as you said, a nifty little red zone carry. So they can find ways to use his athleticism for sure moving forward, but it won't be as a wide receiver because this is Doubs and Lazard's show.
I think he's going to be kind of like use like Chase Claypool, like not the like exciting Chase Claypool, kind of like end sweep, maybe get him on a deep pass. But outside of that, volume is not going to be there.
Okay, we'll get out of here. We'll watch those games that we did not get to later on this week. Be sure to tune in for Hayden Sosa waiver 15-minute show dropping tomorrow evening. John Daigle, BetSports 4 for 4, his podcast and his in-depth waiver content as well. Daigle, pitch all your stuff before we get out here.
4for4.com. I think you can still use the promo code Daigle10. I don't know. DM me. We could probably make it work. 4for4.com. The waiver wire column will be out as it is every Monday afternoon. I will sift through all the injuries and replacements there. yet again, it's going to be a long night, gentlemen.
Yes, it is. And go and check out Daigle's podcast. That is linked in the description down below. And most importantly, we will see you for Stats versus Film on Tuesday, because there is a lot of performances and hidden things that we missed to touch on then. Okay. For Hayden, for Daigle, I'm Josh. We will talk to y'all soon. See ya.